Hi, everybody. My name's Sandy. I'm an alcoholic. My sobriety date is November 14th, 1983. My home group is Borderline Big Book in Port Charlotte, Florida. Now, y'all can tell by my voice, my accent, that I didn't come from there. I come from here, from Georgia. And I'm going to tell you, I've been a nervous wreck the whole time thinking about this conference because I got sober here, in Georgia. And I got, I done service assemblies right down the street, and I showed out a lot down there. I showed out a lot in Georgia, period, just trying to get sober. And I'd just been in my head about it, And I was talking to a friend of mine, probably a year or so. Time flies for me. And I was talking to this lady named Linda, and I said, well, Linda, is so-and-so still? Well, how's so-and-so? Oh, they died. I said, well, what about so-and-so? Oh, they are dead, too. I'm going, well, what about so-and-so? We went through about 10 people, and they're all dead. So I think anybody that I hadn't made amends to is probably dead by now. So I got a reprieve from that. But if that changes, y'all let me know, and I'm absolutely willing to clean it up. I want to thank the committee for the invitation, and I particularly want to thank Nelson and Brenda because, me and Nelson, we might not drink together, but we think alike. And that's trouble right there, because y'all know him. And, he loves Alcoholics Anonymous, and he loves the principles behind the program, and he don't mind sharing that with you, whether you like it or not. And I got sober with people like that. That's why I'm able to stand up here, because they influenced my life. I didn't come here to get sober. I came here to keep from going to prison. Well, I didn't even come here. Y'all came to me. I didn't, what happened for me is I come to one day and I'm sitting in a chair and there's a knock on the door and I look out, peep out the door, and it was the cops, and they're always in the neighborhood because they were always usually after the guy next door. And I opened the door like I've done before and told, I was going to tell them where he lived, but they were looking for me. And they come in through my house and my little trailer, and they, just like they do on what I've seen on TV, and they found what they were looking for. Now, I couldn't tell them that first bag of stuff that they found was what I took to keep me up during the day when I've been out drinking all night. They had it possession with intent to distribute. That second bag that they found was what I did when I stayed up, when I drank all night, stayed up all day, and then had to go to sleep the next night. That was two counts, possession with intent to distribute. And then they found a pistol. And, I couldn't tell them that pistol was what I used to protect me from hobos. They had that illegal possession of a firearm. And I tell you what, I knew I was going to jail. Because, I just knew it. But I knew I couldn't go dressed like I was dressed. So while they were busy, I kind of slipped down the hall and out the back door because my clothes were on the line. And, I had to get some jeans, and they kind of looked up and saw I was missing, and they didn't think kindly about that. They come around that trailer with them guns drawn, scared the crap out of me. I'm just trying to take my pants off the line so I could go to jail properly attired. And they take me to jail, and I stay there, and I can't call him because she may be home, and she didn't like it when I called him. She didn't like Sharon, and she wasn't friendly to me or none of that stuff. And I didn't have no money to get me out of jail. So I finally, about the fifth day, I finally got a deputy to call him in case she was home, and he come and got me out of jail. And I went straight to the bar to see if I was missed, and I was. And I drank all, they had heard about my dilemma. And, if you're facing going to prison, you can drink a lot for free with your friends, and that's what happened that day. I knew I was in trouble. I knew I was fixing to lose this job. And if you'd have stopped and asked me my name, I'd tell you where I was work, because that's who I was. I was my job. And this guy that I used to party with, he had been off somewhere, and he come back talking crazy and half sentences, and we didn't hang out with him much. He would say stuff, well, come on, go have a beer with us. He said, oh, I'm not drinking one day at a time. I say, okay, well, we'll see you tomorrow, and we'd take off to the bar. And he would say, something would happen at work, and it'd be a mess or something. He said, oh, just let go and let God. Let go and let God do what? He was talking crazy and half sentences, so we just left him alone. Well, when I got home, he's out there knocking on my door. I'm going, good Lord. He used to be fun, but now he ain't no more because he's talking in them half sentences. And And I had a little buzz going that morning. I was sipping. I wasn't drinking until I hit the hard liquor. If I was drinking beer, I was sipping. It didn't count. So I was sipping that morning, and here he come. And, you know, and the thing, he probably told me a lot of things that day, but the one thing I heard him say was he knew how I could get my job back. I said, well, sign me up. So he signed me up for treatment. Never been to treatment, never heard of treatment, didn't know what treatment was. And if that's where he had been talking them half sentences, I knew I really didn't want to go because I wanted people to like me and hang out with me and not think I'm just weird like we did with him. So the next thing that happened is these two old guys come to my house and they started telling me all this dirty, nasty stuff they'd done with their drinking and stuff. And what I know today is they were trying to 12-step me. What I thought back then, they were just being dirty old railroad men, you know, cause you know how they are. You know, and I'm cute and hot and all that, so I nod appropriately and giggle and smile and all that kind of stuff because I don't want to seem like I don't appreciate what they're trying to do. And sure enough, they signed me up for treatment. Well, on the data, I didn't know you could go to treatment all tore up. They didn't tell me that. You know, I'm dressed in my blue jeans. I got a crease down the front. I got my Piggly Wiggly sack packed. And I look like I'm going to catch a bus and go to school. I'm sitting on the stoop waiting on them. And here we go to treatment. And so they come, and there's one of those dirty old men was driving, and his wife was in the front seat, and she's in Al-Anon. And she started, you know, we got in the car and here we go off to treatment. She starts talking about sobriety and all the pleasures. She said that you don't drink anymore ever. No. I'm just going to not go to prison. I'm going to get my job back and then I'm going to get on with the rest of my life of having fun and all that because I am too young to live dull and boring lives like y'all, right? That's what I was thinking. Out loud to them, I didn't say that, of course. So I'm sitting back there. The more she talked, the scarier I got. Because I know I had overreacted. Maybe my job wasn't that important after all. Because, I mean, she was serious. I mean, she was serious about them not drinking ever, ever, ever again. And she told me that I was going to not drink ever, ever, ever again. I'm sitting there, I'm going, You know, my treatment was going to last 30 days, and I can do that 30-day thing. When you were talking yesterday about that bag of Quaaludes, I was married to a bag of Quaaludes. I don't know how long that lasted, but I'm thinking it's about 30 days. And I knew that if I could do that, be married that long, I could go to treatment. So we get down to treatment. This AA, this guy goes off and fills out the paperwork, signs me up, whatever he does, and I'm left with this Al-Anon lady, and she's got a hold of my arm, and she is not letting go because she knows I'm like a rabbit. I'm fixing to run, and we walk down this long hall, and it looks like, you know, like this auditorium. You go through the double doors, and she pushes me through, and then the door closes, and there's no door handle on my side. So I'm looking up at that window, and I'm crying for real now because I know I have overreacted, and if I can get my ass out of here, I am going back home and to hell with that job and all that other stuff. I'm going to have me some fun. And that woman, you know, I mean, I'm blowing snot, and I don't cry pretty, and my makeup's running because I got dressed up to go to treatment. And I'm plastered up against that wall, and she keeps right on walking down that hall. I hated Al-Anon. That heifer never did turn back and look at me or nothing. She just kept right on walking. And I wind up in treatment. And it just so happens that I went to Willingway. And I see one of the guys from there here, and it just touches that spot, you know. It was a start for me. So you know, they're trying to figure out the paperwork, and I know that I'm fixing to go to court and prison and all this kind of stuff, so I can't confess because I don't want that on the records, but I got to give them enough to fill out the paperwork. So this lady is talking to me in that center, and, you know, I'm sure she said a lot of things, but the one thing I remember that she said was, honey, you don't ever have to feel the way you feel inside ever again unless you want to. And she left. And I know she said other stuff, but I don't remember any of the other stuff she said. I just sit there and I just thought about all my life I've been feeling like crap. I come out of the chute 6 foot tall, and when you're 60, it's awesome, but when you're 8, 9, it sucks because your feet hit the door before they ever see anything looks like a body. And when they find the body, it ain't no meat there. I mean, I didn't have none of that. I didn't have none of that girl stuff, you know, boobs or nothing. I was long and tall, and that's all. I tried to have boobs one time, and they wound up down the hall, stuck to that tissue, stuck to the. I mean, it wasn't like it is today. You can just go get them. I mean, I had to. I mean, I used toilet paper, and it didn't stay put. I didn't even have enough to hold it in. You know, and everybody laughed at me about that. I mean, I was always in the back of the picture line, and, you know, I just hated that. It was never guys tall enough for me because, like I said, I'd come out 6 foot tall. And, God, I just hated it. I hated Mama because she raised four of us by herself, and she worked in the cotton mill, and we were on the other side of the tracks. And I hated it. I got a brother, I got three brothers, but one of them older, two younger. I got the perfect brother younger than me, did everything right, played with his toys, washed them, put them up, just like he's supposed to. I got him out of the house and tried to kill him with rocks. I just beat the crap out of him because I hated him, you know, because Mama always wanted me to be like him. And I always wanted to be out there with them, doing that, you know. I always grew up with a big pack of boys. You can't chase me nowhere with no bug, no snake, none of that. I can, you know, gut and fish and all that kind of stuff. I can make a Coca-Cola can dance with a pistol, you know, but as far as putting the stuff together as a woman, I don't have any idea. I didn't come up around a pack of girls. And that's what I thought about in that treatment center. And she said I didn't have to feel the way I was feeling inside. You know, when I started drinking, that's some of the feelings that I wanted to get rid of, was all that, because I never felt like you looked. I was long and tall, and that's all. Over and over and over, that's how I felt. And when I started drinking, all of that went away. When I started drinking, I filled out like a woman. I had boobs, I had a butt, my tongue laid down, I could talk to the boys like a girl. And I mean, I loved it. I was free to be. And that's the first time ever. And once I had that, I started chasing that. And I thought about that day. And she said, all you got to do is do what we ask you to do. So I started doing that. You know, and I done my first attempt at an inventory, and I realized I really didn't hate that Al-Anon. You know, I wrote her a letter and asked her if she'd forgive me for, I don't think I said anything bad to her on the ride, but I was sure thinking a lot. And, you know, and I asked her if she would sponsor me when I got out. And you know what that woman told me? She would. Because I got sober in a little small town you could fit in this building, and there wasn't a lot of women staying sober there. And there wasn't a lot of women in the meetings, you know. It wasn't where women could work with women and men work, you know. There just wasn't a lot of women sober in this little small town where I live. So this AA man and this Al-Anon woman double-teamed me. And you know what? And that was back when Al-Anon believed and AA believed that it was a family illness, and we worked together and helped each other and we worked toward recovery together as a family. And I was so grateful for that. But anyway, after I got out of this little, I mean, after my time was up in this treatment center, they wanted to put me in a halfway house. And I'm going, well, that's cool, you know, because I want to get better. But they want to put me in a halfway house with all girls. Now, I just told y'all, I don't know what to do with girls. You know, and they had rules. They want you to wear all your clothes. I don't even have the clothes they want me to wear. I mean, I don't know about your drinking, but my drinking, when I got tore up and trying to get out of the back seat and put everything back on, I get tangled up in it with my feet, and I just throw it away and quit wearing it. You know, it's too much trouble, you know. Get tickled, trying to get up, drunk, laying out. No. So I just quit wearing it, but now they want me to wear all that. And we got to travel in a pack, kind of like in a group, kind of like a pack of ducks. You know, where one goes, everybody goes. So, you know, they had rules. They had rules. So, you know, I don't ever want to forget. When I'm up here and I'm dressed up and I look nice and I just got to remember that that's where I started. You know, and those women shoved me in a dressing room and they paraded panties across that store and bras across that store because I didn't even know what size underwear I wore when I got to y'all. And you know what? They didn't laugh at me that day because I didn't know it either. You know, what happened for me, it always happens for me. When I say, I don't know what to do, will you help me? You always do, and you never laugh at me that day. Now, by the end of the week, we thought it was funny as all get out. you know, and they just made a big production. You know how alcoholics are. They got a sense of humor. So I stayed in that halfway house till I'd done my time. You know, and what I found out is women wasn't my problem, is because I thought all the women were like me and wasn't nothing sacred to me. If it wasn't tied down, I'd steal it. I didn't care if he had a ring on his hand or not. I had no respect for nothing. And I judged everybody by how I was. And I found out not all women were like that. And I get ready to come home, and I come out of that treatment center, and I'm an alcoholic and an addict. So I go to this meeting, and back when I got sober, there wasn't a meeting every time you turned around. We had two meetings a week in this small town, and then all the rest of the nights of the week, we got in the car and we drove. We had the meeting going, we had the meeting there, and then we had the meeting coming home. Because in this little small town, you're 30 minutes from everywhere. 45 minutes from a mall, you know, I mean, so we lived out in the sticks. So I come home, this AA, this Al-Anon woman agreed to sponsor me and all that kind of stuff, and we start going to meetings. And I go to meetings, my name's Sandy, and I'm an alcoholic and an addict. And this old fart in the back of the room, kind of like Nelson, will scream about his hemorrhoids. Yeah, I got hemorrhoids too. What's that got to do with it? He said, that's right, don't you ever forget it. I'm going, what? You know, and they had warned me about him. You know, they had warned me about him. He was running newcomers off left and right. And, you know, everybody was scared of him. He was an old timer. I think he had like 5 years sober. But he knew that book. And he loved an alcoholic. And I'm going to tell you, he didn't care how many times he hurt my feelings. So what I'd do is I'd just cuss him all the way home. And I would pray for him every meeting I went to. I would pray that he would have a car wreck and die. Because my name's Sandy, I'm an alcoholic and an addict, and he'd scream about them stupid hemorrhoids. What's that got to do? I got hemorrhoids too, but what's that got to do with it? I'm going, what in the world is he talking about? You know, finally I asked somebody. They won't tell you nothing until you ask. So I finally pulled somebody else aside. Why is he picking on me like that? They said, well, Sandy, come here and let me tell you. When you're in the rooms of Alcoholics Anonymous and you're an alcoholic and anything else, you're saying you're different from us. Now, if you're different from us, we need to get you where you can get the best help. But you need to find out if you're an alcoholic, because if you're an alcoholic, we have a solution for you. Why don't you get Bill's story and see if you can identify with Bill? I was told to go to chapter 5 and read how it works. I didn't know there was a Bill story, but they told me about Bill's story. It's in the front of the book. And the reason it's there is so people like me can try to identify if they're an alcoholic or not. So I got in Bill's story. And you know, Bill talked about stealing. I did that. He talked about drinking and doing drugs. I did that. He talked about the loneliness and despair that he felt. I knew that. He talked about how people would talk about his drinking and he'd just quit hanging out with them. Now it's worded different in there, but that's what he's saying to me. And I did that, you know. And he talked about before Bill's story. It talks about in the doctor's opinion that we're restless, irritable, and discontented. And I have been that all my life. And you know, I got in that front of that book and I tried to identify as an alcoholic. Now I am young. When I got sober, I was 26. I was hot. You know, I wanted to be a drug addict because it was a lot cooler than being an alcoholic. Because an alcoholic was somebody coming under the bridge with pissy pants and sucking on a wine bottle, right? That was my idea of an alcoholic. I did not know that what made me an alcoholic is once I started drinking, I craved more. And also what made me drink is that my mind told me it's going to be different next time, so I'd pick up that drink and go again. I didn't know that. Well, I learned it, but I didn't know it then. So I go in that meeting, y'all done turned me into an alcoholic, and I go in that meeting, my name's Sandy and I'm an alcoholic. And you know what? He didn't scream about his hemorrhoids no more. I didn't know I had the power to cure him, but obviously I do. So we start riding everywhere to meetings. I mean, I thought step one was get in the car. Because they would call me and say, Sandy, we're gonna be by to pick you up at 6 o'clock. Where are we going? It don't matter. Get in the car. Click, okay. So, I mean, I'd be ready and we'd go to the meeting and we would, I mean, we traveled all over the southeast of Georgia going to meetings and we'd have the meeting there going, you know, in the car. We'd have the meeting there, and we'd have the meeting coming home. And then we'd put on a pot of coffee at the house and just float off. We were so spiritual. That's what happened. I didn't have no job. I mean, I wasn't working at this point, but some other people that were in that car did. And you know what? They sat up with me all night like that. Not all night, but I mean 1 o'clock, midnight. And they had to get up and go to work. But, you know, that's where in the car coming home, that's where I asked all the questions that I didn't want them to know. I didn't know. Because I'd been to treatment. I had all the answers. You know how we are. And me and this one guy, we start winking and blinking at each other. And he asked me for an AA date. Now, newcomers, if you ain't been on the AA date, I don't know what to tell you, but my idea of an AA date and an AA date was different. Because here's what happened. Here's my AA date. He comes, picks me up. We go to eat before the meeting because everything in this little small town shuts down by 8 o'clock. So after the meetings were from 8 to 9. You say a 9 o'clock meeting anymore, people go, oh my God, that's way past my bedtime. But they didn't have early meetings. So we would go and get something to eat, and we'd go to the meeting, and we'd come home, and then he would leave. I didn't see the point in no AA date. You know, you're on the stoop, and you don't know whether to kiss or say, close with the Lord's Prayer, for God's sakes. So me and my Al-Anon sponsor are in the, she was a gardener, and we're in the garden because I don't understand him not wanting to touch all of this, right? Because I mean, I have been put on, when I got sober, when I went into treatment, I was a size like 6 or 7, okay? I'm half of what I am today. Yeah, you do grow in sobriety. And you talked about that. And I done put on like 2 or 3 pounds. I mean, I'm looking good. I done told y'all I'm young. I think I'm hot. And I don't understand how come you don't want some of all this. So I'm in the garden with this Al-Anon lady, and we're digging potatoes, and I'm slinging dirt, and I'm cussing. That was my language at that point, cussing. And because I didn't understand what was wrong with him or me, and I was talking to her about it. And I'm going to tell you, if you're not sponsoring people, you're missing out on some cheap entertainment. I do not know how that lady kept a straight face that day. I don't. And I don't know that she did. She just didn't let me see it if she was cracking up. Because I tell you what, I've had some sponsees just crack me up with their good ideas. But anyway, so I'm talking to her about it. And she's going, well, Sandy, maybe he's trying to show you some respect. Respect. Well, ain't that when they've been with you that night and then they call you the next day? That's kind of respect I'm looking for, you know. Like I said, I don't know how she kept a straight face. But me and this guy started winking and blinking at each other. And, you know, I get a call from the lawyer, and they want to go to court. And he wants me to wear a dress. Well, I don't own no dress. And I told you, I just got underwear, for Pete's sake. And they want me to wear a dress, and I got a skirt in the back. You know, the kind, in the South, you always got something you're going to bury people in. And it was in the back of the closet, and I must have got it from like a secondhand store because it didn't have no tag in it. And, you know, there's a zipper in the skirt in this one. And I don't know what to do with the zipper. So I call my Al-Anon fashionista. You know how they are. They're dressed to the nines. Everything matches perfect. And she had been talking to me about buying my clothes at Sluts or Us, and we were working on that. So I called her about where to put this zipper, and she ain't home. So I get the alcoholic on the phone. He said, oh, hell, Sandy, just put the zipper in the front like we do. And here I go off to court. I cannot imagine what I look like. But that's where I put that zipper. It was in the front. I got to tell you, I do not cut any tags on any skirt I ever own because the tag goes in the back. No matter, and that's the way I can tell where the zipper goes. It's tags in the back. And here we go to court, and I get first offender's probation. And what happened for me is my probation officer got to see y'all. You know, not y'all, but what y'all had done for me. I got to pee a clean urine thing every time I went, every month. I got to pay my fines every time, on time, not late. I showed up there on time, not late. And I got an opportunity to work with some other people that were drinking as a result of that. So, I mean, we're clicking along, and I'm that old guy that I cured. I was sitting there back then, you know, we had in the rooms, there was everybody smoked, and there was a smoking section on that side. So I was sitting in the smoking section, I'm looking cute, right, smoking, and the basket passed. Well, I just passed it, but I'm looking cute. And I'm smoking them cigarettes, and that old timer, he come up, he took my pack of cigarettes, he popped me on the nose with them. He said, if you can afford these, you can afford that. What's the price of your life anyway? Slammed them down and walked off. And I mean, this was while the meeting was going on. He did not pull me aside when everybody was gone and talk to me about being a contributing member or being self-supporting through my own contributions or none of that crap. He popped me in the nose right there in front of God and everybody. And I tell you what, that basket has not passed me yet without me having put money in it, unless I forgot it. You know, I had people like that getting me sober. I offered that old guy this. I know that's probably what he thought too. I did, you know, and he said, honey, I don't want in your pants. God, I can just hear him go, ooh. Because when we come in new, he said, I want you sober. You know what? And I didn't understand that. I didn't understand that. He said, honey, you offer everything you got. You just got to offer different stuff. And I didn't understand that. You know, he talked in all these half sentences just all the time. Just made me crazy. Because I didn't know what he was trying to tell me. I do today. You know, but those are the kind of old timers that I had in front of me and didn't care about my little feelings. I go in there whining about, I'm done with this, I'm going to get drunk. He'd pull a $5 bill out of his pocket, wave it in my face. He said, let me buy your first pint, Missy. He'd be waving that $5 at me. I'd say, get out of my face, and I'd start cussing and go sit down. Yeah. Me and this guy that I had that AA date with, we start winking and blinking each other, and we get married, and we walk off in the sunset and burn up. That's what happened. Took us about 5 years. It was a slow burn. But what happened was I had an affair. And what happened behind that is people in my group didn't know much about traditions. They didn't care about them. They took sides, and it wasn't mine. And they called me a whore to my face and in the meetings. And I just, you know, I went up to the podium one night and I told them what they could do with their mothers and their brothers and their sisters and their aunts and their dogs and their cats. And I sashayed out of there. I did not need Alcoholics Anonymous or any of them, right? Well, we know that's a lie. But I didn't have nowhere to go. You know, I didn't have nowhere to go. I was 5 years sober when this happened. Jim talked about that 20-year increment or whatever. There's those 5-year increments too, and they take us out or they bring us in, or they kill us. That's what happens with us. And I'm at that 5-year thing, and I, you know, I'm sitting on the bed, and I know drinking's not an option for me, but blowing my brains out is, because I'm in that place. I can't come to AA because y'all took sides that ain't mine. I started going to meetings of Narcotics Anonymous. They didn't know who I was. They didn't care. I respected those meetings and shared, you know, that I was an addict when I was in there, and I respected where I was at. And I called this old guy that I cured, and I hadn't talked to him in a long time. We started a meeting, didn't tell him where it was. You know, we didn't want him coming over there running our newcomers off. So we set up on this little white pedestal, I guess, and we waited for them to come to us. We were so spiritual. And it's a wonder we all didn't get drunk with that kind of thing. So I'm sitting there, I got this pistol beside my bed, and I called this guy, and, you know, and I'm crying, not pretty, like I shared with y'all, you know, and he said, honey, can you drive? I said, yeah. He said, get in the car. Step one. So I get in the car. And I go over there to his house. And you know what? He was on the stoop and his arms was open and I fell in them. And he didn't say, "Sandy, why did you say or why did you call me all those names?" or none of that. That man loved an alcoholic and he loved me because I had spunk. He told me that a lot of times. Because he'd tell me something and I'd just walk off cussing. I'd wanted to hit him, but I just didn't. And he put me in his hip, him and his wife put me in their hip pocket. And they taped conferences all over the Southeast. And I was able to work that tape table for my room and board and meals because I didn't have no money. I was going through a divorce. And I heard speakers get up here and tell the reality of sobriety, you know. And not that just got sober and everything's wonderful. I mean, they talked about life on life's terms. And there was a speaker from California and he said he sat in a meeting with three of his ex-wives. And I guarantee I won't talk to him after he got done. And they wasn't fighting. You know, I wanted to know what he did. And he told me what he did. You know, he took his own inventory, not anybody else's. And he told me, he explained to me about the traditions. And about the principles here. This is Alcoholics Anonymous. This is not something I do on Tuesday because I'm bored. You know, and if I'm an alcoholic and my life depends on it, if I'm married to an alcoholic, his life depends on it too. And I got to shut up and welcome him in the door. Now, I didn't want to do that. I didn't want to do that because he'd been mean to me. but what happened is I started praying for God to just let me be able to make amends for that. So I'm in the district meeting. I'm in service. I'm back going to meetings and stuff. And I'm praying for a woman sponsor, and because this old guy that I cured, he's sponsoring me now, because Al-Anon, it was just a big mess behind the affair, and so this man is sponsoring me. And if you have a problem with that, I don't want to hear it, because at that time nobody would take me, because I went around to these women and asked them if they would sponsor me, and they said no. I'd go to meetings, and somebody said, "Here, call her, she'll sponsor you." Sandy from. And they say the name of my town. I go, "Yeah, oh no." And they're too busy, whatever. They're you know, they're old timer and don't do that no more, whatever. I got every excuse in the book. So this old guy sponsored me, and I'm forever grateful. Him and his wife double teamed me. And I'm sitting at the district meeting, and in walks ex-husband. I go, "God, I didn't want to make that amend today. I wanted to make it, but I didn't want to make it today." You know, and you know how the noise is before the meeting? Everybody's talking and laughing and, you know, cussing. I just, you know, with all that jabber. Well, when he walked in, it stopped. Because they had been in the rooms with us before and it was not pretty. I got sober in front of y'all. I made all my messes in front of y'all. So, you know, I got up out of my seat and I walked across to him. And I told him I was glad he was there. Now, I wasn't glad to see him there. But I was glad he's there because it's Alcoholics Anonymous. You know, it is Alcoholics Anonymous. And so I walked away from there free. I didn't know every time he turned a page. I didn't know every time he picked up a cup of coffee. I didn't know when he talked to anybody there. I was free of that moment that I walked up and talked to him. So about this time, I start praying for a woman sponsor. And I keep praying about a woman sponsor. And another good thought I had was, you know, I need children. You know, I hadn't had any. And so I find me a man that's got a couple and we get married. And I don't know how I do that, but I do that. So we get married and I got these two kids. And I'm here to tell you, lack of children is not my dilemma. But the thing that happened with that was I didn't swing out on another man. You know, I was concerned about these kids and all that kind of stuff. And so, I mean, I just started praying. I just started praying for God to give me a woman sponsor. And I got a tape. And this lady said on the tape that she had to get in AA or get out. And I knew I was there. So it took us a couple of days to get caught up because she lived in California. And, I call her because I want to ask her to be my sponsor, but I got an interviewer, right? You know how we are. So she starts asking me all these questions. I'm thinking to myself, wait a minute, I'm supposed to be... No. She said, "Well, honey, how many meetings are you going to?" I'm going to one. Because at this point, I hadn't cleaned up the mess of what I told all y'all. And I can't go back to that meeting because I showed out. And she said, "Oh, that's going to change." But I can't explain it to her yet because I'm in the interview process, and I don't want her to know really, you know, really, you know, I'll come to it, but not right off the bat. So, and she said, we're going to set up a call time convenient to her. Convenient to her. I'm asking her to be my sponsor. She ought to be available to me 24/7. And she's talking about convenient to her. In my head, that's what I'm saying, but out loud to her, I said, yes, ma'am. She said, we're going to go through the big book. Well, I've been in the big book a long time. I'm a big book thumper from way back, you know. But I didn't tell her that out loud to her. I said, yes, ma'am. She said, and you're going to get a home group. I said, well, I got one of those. And you're going to get a commitment at that home group. I said, a commitment? So I had to ask her what her idea of a commitment was. Mine was when you, you know, go speak somewhere. Hers is like greeter, coffee maker, set up the chairs, mop the floors, you know, that kind of commitment. But see, my little meeting that I was going to, it was already all set up. I mean, you do a key and unlock it and hit the button for the coffee. I mean, that's what you do. She said, well, you like to pee on a clean toilet, don't you? I knew it was a trick question. I knew I shouldn't have answered it, but I did. I said, yes, ma'am. She said, that's your commitment. She said, you're going to wear a dress to your home group. I go, a dress? Damn, I'm back to that stupid skirt. You know, at least I know where the zipper is because me and Alan and Lady had a discussion about that. And I said, a dress? She said, honey, it ain't for you. It's so you can be an example to the newcomer. Because if you're looking like they are, what have they got to look up to or to aspire to be? I'm going, oh. So here I am in this little podunk town. I'm in the bathroom scrubbing a toilet in a stupid dress, and I got people at the door laughing at me. Yeah, get you one of them California sponsors. Look what they'll let you do. But I tell you what, I couldn't hit nobody. I just scrubbed the hell out of that toilet. Because, you know, I promised her, you know, I wouldn't do that. And you know what? She softened me up. She showed me by her example and taught me what to do in the meeting. She, you know, I was talking about the old timers don't want to do this and do that or do the other. She said, you get by that door and you greet them new people. She said, them new people don't know no different. You show them. Show them what I'm doing with you. Do the same thing. It's a program of Alcoholics Anonymous. And she taught me all three sides, just not two. And that's the reason I love the theme for this, preserving our future with and the steps, the traditions, the program, and the fellowship. You know, all three sides. You know, she took me through the big book. She took me through the 12 and 12. She took me through the concepts. And I thought the service manual, I thought the concepts was for them lawyers up in New York. I didn't know I could apply them to me personally. But she taught me that. And I started to change. And about this time, I'm getting some gas, and a nosy neighbor comes up and says, I know somebody you need to meet because I'm off men, right? I know one thing about me. I'm done with that. I am done hurting people. I'm done hurting me. I don't know how to have a relationship. I'm just through with it. I'm just going to be a service to God through Alcoholics Anonymous, and I'm good with that. And this nosy neighbor says, I know a guy you need to meet. I go, oh, God. She said, Sandy, he needs you. You know, we're all about service, right? I said, okay, tell him to call me. And I got in my car and I drove off. Now, I did not give her my phone number. Now, this is back before cell phones. I mean, phone numbers were listed in the phone book and all that kind of stuff. And he worked for the telephone company, so he had a way. And he called me that night. And I'm thinking to myself, if he's weird or anything like that, I am going to lie like a dog and I am out of here. You know, and this guy, he called me and I said, oh, yeah, come on down. There was two houses between us. So he come down to the house and I said, I'll put on some coffee. That's what we do. We put on a pot of coffee and we talk. And he said, all right, I'll be right there. And that's when I got thinking, if he's weird, I am out of here. So I open up the door and I go, whew, I am good. Because I don't do short men and he's short. I got to tell y'all a story. First time I saw Mike. I used to come up here to make into the service assemblies. And, you know, you can see Mike anywhere because he's so big, right? Well, I sit 2 years and watched him strut. This is back when he had long black hair. He was so cute. Now, I didn't ever tell him that because I'm scared to death because of cute guys, you know, because I'm not. But I just sit there and watch him and drool. 2 years it took me to get up courage to come up and say, hello, my name's Sandy. You know, I was a GSR or something. But anyway, because I did tall guys, not, and I didn't say I'm not, ooh, that didn't come out right. never mind. Me and Wendell sat down, had pot coffee that night, and it was good. You know, he was a short guy. He was a nice guy. He was a nice guy that I would never date. You know, if they wasn't tall and handsome and beating the crap out of you, I didn't want to mess with them. I brought that's what I brought to y'all. So anyway, we started dating, and you know, and slowly we started having feelings for each other, and I knew that I had to do something different, because I talked to Bob one time, the old guy that I cured. I said, Bob, why do I keep picking these guys? You know, he said, Sandy, it ain't got nothing to do with a guy. He said, the only common denominator in any of those relationships is you. I said, well, when am I going to quit? I want him to tell me Tuesday at 2:05 or something. He said, honey, you just got to do it till you can't do it no more. And I was at that point. I didn't want to do it anymore. So I wanted to take an inventory of me. And that's a sponsor suggestion, you know. And I started looking at me in my past relationships and stuff. And it wasn't some magic thing. I'd done an inventory. You know, I'm a kicking, screaming 2-year-old. I want everything my way. I don't want to share, and I want it now. And I'm going to tell you, those are not principles for a successful relationship. I don't care who you're with. So because I don't know what difference is, I asked God to start taking me to different. And he did. And I told Wendell during this process, I didn't want to see him, I needed some time by myself, and he gave it to me. And one morning I woke up and I knew that I knew, and that day Wendell called me. He said, I need to talk to you, and I said, I need to talk to you too. July 4th, we celebrated 23 years of marriage. I know, huh? Bob told me, he said, you keep fishing in the same pond, you're going to keep getting the same fish. And I don't have a fishing pole in my car. I hadn't talked to him about going fishing. I don't know what in the world he's talking about, because I don't get it. But Wendell was different. And I asked God to make me different so that relationship could be different. And when Wendell asked me to marry him, I said, I'll marry you one day at a time. I've been married forever 3 times. I ain't doing it no more. Because one day at a time, I can act like I care. One day at a time, I can be a faithful wife. One day at a time, I can be kind and considerate. And that's what we do, one day at a time. And those days have added up, just like with my sobriety, you know. And I'm real spiritual when I got money. Serious. So, I mean, I had a good job. Wendell had a good job. We were sober. I had a good sponsorship, you know, relationship with my sponsor, all of that. I mean, we're life in session is good. And about 10 years sober, Wendell lost his job. So sponsor said, ask all them girls you're sponsoring to give you a ride to the meeting. I said, oh, I can't do that. I'm the bus driver. I'd make my circle, pick up all my little girls, and we'd go to the meeting like a pack of ducks, you know. And she said, Sandy, she said, this program ain't all about giving. You got to learn that lesson about giving, but you also got to learn the lesson about how to receive. Bob let Wendell paint his cabinets for our grocery money. He let him. Those cabinets didn't need paint. But Bob knew the alcoholic. He knew that we have to earn our way. You know, he knew how to help. You know, and the big book talks about that. So I started talking to the girls I sponsor. I need you to come pick me up. Oh, Sandy, we'll be honored to do that. See, I didn't know that. You know, so they started picking me up. She said I had to go to the meeting and tell y'all that Wendell lost his job. See, I didn't want to do that because my pride and my ego is involved, right? Because I want to look good all the time. One more time, you know, when I go and tell y'all really what's going on, you know, and everything settles down, it's fine, you know. And I said, I said, well, I don't want to do that. She said, well, don't you think they're going to think it's funny when the bank comes get that little sports car you're driving around? Yeah. She said, Sandy, it ain't about you. It's about showing the newcomer that you can go through job loss and stay sober through it and still participate in Alcoholics Anonymous and not stay home and hide. you know, and that's what I did. I went to the meeting and I told y'all. And Wendell got a job in Idaho. Iowa, Idaho, where are we going? We went to Idaho. And I'm going to tell you, God lives in Idaho too. They were doing it wrong at the meetings. They do not close with the Lord's Prayer there. They don't. They open with a moment of silence and they close with a serenity prayer because out there they believe the Lord's Prayer is Christian and there's a lot of Native Americans out there and they just don't. It's against the traditions to them out there. Now, I thought they'd go to hell for sure, you know, because it's sacrilegious, right? But my sponsor said, you don't tell them nothing unless they ask. Now, I'm sitting here. At that time I had 11 years sober, and I can't tell nobody I got that much time. They think I'm a newcomer because she got me by the door, welcoming all the newcomers, telling them what my name is, sit in the same place every meeting. Even though they don't know who you are, they'll know when you're not there. You know, and I got to show the principles of Alcoholics Anonymous in Idaho. You know, it's kind of like God opened up the fairy tale book and throwed us in it and slammed it shut. We learned how to ski. You know, I got to sponsor girls out there. I got to show them the program like it was taught to me, all three sides. I mean, one time, some girls I was sponsoring and my husband, we were having like a concept meeting at the house, and they were having fun in it, and I got mad because it's serious when I'm teaching AA. We laugh about that today. You know, we laugh about it. You know, it's the back of the bus, them B trustees, they're the alcoholics. They're the ones in the back of the bus. And they just thought that was so funny that they thought of that as a way to remember that. And I was mad because they should be serious. And and it was just wonderful in Idaho. About this time, my mama gets sick and she can't live by herself. I said, come out to Idaho and live with us. Oh, no. I was a little hellion for my mama. And I've made amends to her and all that kind of stuff. And, you know, I had an opportunity to be a kind, loving daughter. Because she come out to Idaho for 2 weeks. That's how long she was going to stay. And her ashes are in Idaho. You know, she got to see y'all. She got to see me with y'all. You know, she got to see what a kind, loving daughter looked like. She got to do all of that. You know, and my husband had a stroke while we were in Idaho. And our life became different. And you know what? Y'all showed up for that, too. You know, what I had to do was bury the idea of the husband that I had. You know, some old ideas don't work for me. You know, and I didn't know that was an old idea until I kept getting pissed off because he wasn't who he used to be. You know, age changes a lot of things. Sickness changes a lot of things. So what happened for me is I done an inventory and I buried my idea of who he used to be and just became willing to accept whoever showed up that day. I'm not going anywhere. I'm kind loving. Wife one day at a time. I'm a faithful wife one day at a time. And you know what? And we got through it. Wendell come out okay. he's got aphasia, and that means his ups are down and his nights are days, and Thanksgiving's Christmas, and we just have a hell of a time talking. Because what comes out of his mouth is not what's in his head, and I don't hear what's in his head. I hear what comes out of his mouth. And I react to what comes out of his mouth. And it's trying, and we've struggled, but you know what? We're still together, and that's through God's grace. So, Mama got sick, and you know when I was out of town, and they put her on the machines until we got back in town, and when we unplugged those machines, the emergency room doctor was a home group member, the emergency room nurse was a home group member. My girls that I sponsor were there. Wendell was there. You know, we closed with the Lord's Prayer around my mama. And there wasn't any of that, honey, I wished I should have said. Or, honey, I wished I'd have done. You know, because y'all had given me the privilege and the opportunity to take care of all of that. And y'all were there. So Wendell gets transferred to Albuquerque, New Mexico. Now, I moved from a little bitty town with no mall to Pocatello, Idaho, 50,000. Down to Albuquerque, New Mexico, 1 million people. 1 million. I hated Albuquerque. I hated the meetings down there. They were hour and a half long. It was hard. It was just hard on me. I cried a month. And one more time, you know, sponsors, you know, the things that this lady taught me held me in good standing in Albuquerque too. You know, go early. Stick your hand out. Be by the door. Sit in the same chair every meeting, every week, even though they don't know who you are. And I got to sponsor people there. and y'all showed up. I got to show them Alcoholics Anonymous, like I've been taught, and it's just been a good life. Wendell got retirement age, and he was tired of working. He said, "I'm gonna retire." So he wanted to get back to the water, so we moved to Florida, and we were there a month, and then I had some heart issues, some serious heart issues, and Wendell don't get to retire. What happened was I got sick. We didn't have insurance. We were going to get to it when we got the house unpacked. We were going to do it later. I was going to do it later, whatever. We didn't have insurance with all that. And $200,000 later, we're in debt up to our eyeballs. And I'm home from the hospital. Doctors say I'm okay. We were there a month, and then I got sick. So I don't know y'all yet, right? I'm calling people in Albuquerque, and they're calling me and checking on me, but I don't know y'all. So I'm sitting there, and I'm praying, "God, you got to get me out of this house. You got to get me to the meetings." So God, in His wisdom, or in His, I don't know, just in God's got a sense of humor to me. So I met this guy in Spain, and he was visiting another guy that I met in Spain on the other side of the state. Okay, then Ian was going to drive across the state of Florida to have dinner with me and Wendell, spend an afternoon. Okay, he comes across the state, we have dinner, and I tell Ian really what's going on with me, and how I'm just at a bad, bad spot. I am 30 years sober, and I'm at a bad, bad spot. Can't go to the meetings. I can't call y'all. I tried to use that stupid phone list, and they thought I was a telemarketer. Pissed me off, and I hung up, and I didn't dial another number. You know, I don't know about y'all, but that's the kind of person I am when I get in my head and away from y'all. So Ian made me promise that I would go to a meeting that day, and I said, "I promise you I will." So I look in the schedule because I'm not familiar with the city. I'm not familiar with the streets. I get a newcomer. It's a beginner's meeting. And I tell Wendell, "I'm going to a meeting." And I get in the car, put it in the GPS because I don't know where I'm going. And I go out my driveway, around a block, come around, and just make one block. If I'd have walked out my front door and went a half a block, I'd have been right there. Now, anytime I think that my God ain't got my best interest at heart, or that He don't love me, I think about what He brought a guy from Australia that I met in Spain. He came to Florida and brought him all the way across the state to get me to go a half a block. Y'all introduced me to that God, and I will be forever, ever grateful. Thank you so much.